Welcome to this week's episode of the CPG View, the number one CPG information source for global omnichannel leaders.
Graham, thank you so much for being on this week's episode of the CPG View. I've been a fan of yours for, like I was telling you before, probably a few years before you even knew who I was. So excited to have you on. I think about our mission on the CPG View is to educate, encourage, and empower high impact leaders. And it so much aligns with the work that I see you doing in the space. Before we get started, would you mind introducing yourself and the company you're with?
Yeah, so I'm Graham Robertson of Beloved Brands. I've been doing this, training and developing and trying to encourage people to get smarter in marketing for over a decade now. And prior to that, I was a lifelong marketer and worked at some of the biggest brands like Coke and General Mills and J&J. And that is where my true passion is. I love marketing. It's one of those things that just captured me and has kept me energized and going for all these years.
You know what? I'm a self-admitted big-time dork or nerd or whatever type of term you want to say. And I think that is actually why I was drawn to the type of content you were producing. It's very much similar to what I was sharing. It's very focused on frameworks and charts and graphs and process and logic. And I also spent, similar to you, I spent nearly two decades within the CPG durable space working at a company called Newell Brands. And yep. So many of the things we would go through over the years, our annual planning process, our annual budget review, our annual marketing, our, you know, all of the meetings, it was so funny because I remember looking at some of your content thinking, wow, we all just lived the same life. We just didn't realize it. Awesome.
I am a marketing dork as well, if we want to call it that. You know, I go on vacation and I'm off to the grocery store just to look around at the different aisles. Yeah. I watch TV for the commercials and, that's my passion area. And I do like process, but I do believe process enables the creativity. Once you feel comfortable, it opens your brain up a little more. And that's where the creativity comes in.
Awesome. Well, hey, I wanted to dive in. We'll get into a couple of questions here. You know, would you mind sharing an example of your experience at whether it was at J&J or to your point, Coke or General Mills, where applying strategic thinking led to a notable success in either positioning or marketing execution?
Yeah. And the biggest one I worked on was the repositioning of Listerine. And we moved from a fresh breath space where we were not as good as our competitor, which is Scope, into more of a healthy mouth space where we could own and occupy this space around gingivitis. And that was really a fun project to work on because I remember the first time we told consumers about gingivitis, there was no awareness of it. And even in the first ad, we built it over time. You know, I think the first response was about 5% of people associate our first ad with gingivitis, and it kept going from there. And that's where, you know, a few years in, we had the 70 to 80% of people associating the brand with gingivitis, but it did take some time. And for a 120-year-old brand, we really needed to find some new growth. And I connect strategy to numbers a lot. And one of the things that I worked out mathematically was, you know, we were looking for growth on this 120-year-old brand. And I sort of came across a mathematical equation that if we could get 1% of our current users, that's it, to use us once a day, not even twice a day, we're going to tell them use it twice a day. But even if we could get 1% to use it once a day, we could grow double digits. And for the next 10 years after this strategy, I think we averaged about 12 to 13% growth without really driving penetration. There's a lot of, on Listerine, there's a lot of brand rejection because of taste and intensity and flavor keeps a lot of people out. So we stayed in around the 18 to 20% penetration number. And it was really hard. We looked at some other ideas outside of the core mouthwash to get the penetration up. But it was really that mathematical equation that got me excited a little bit too. Sometimes I think, you hear all these people in the marketing space talk about, the science of marketing. And I look at it as a combination between the art and science and the math and the creativity of things. That's one of the big differences I see.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I joined a company called Pattern about 6 months ago. And it's funny, you talk about a formulaic approach, and the founder, great guy, super smart. His wife founded this company, and they, the headlines are tremendous, right? Unicorn, valued at $1 billion, $2 billion, all the things that are, you can read in the online. And, but you get, and you actually speak with him, and he's been on the podcast before as well. And it's funny how similar what you were saying is to how he looks at it. He's like, it's a formula. Now his background is in data scientists, data science. So it's probably a little far on that one extreme, but it is art and science. But in the Pattern case, it's revenue equals traffic times conversion times price. Yep. Multiplied together for lifetime value. And it just is interesting commonality there. And I do agree with you. I think it's a bit of art and it's a bit of science. And those that I've seen that do it the best understand that.
Well, there's a movie, The Beautiful Mind, where he's looking up at the ceiling and he sees all these numbers. And to me, that's when I see a great ad, somehow I see numbers. I have this phrase that I use that finance people see numbers, advertising people see art. The best marketers see art and numbers at the same time. So when I see an ad that I love, almost in my head, I can hear a cash register going ding, 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 ding. And it's like, okay, I get it now. And that's what I connected to. And that's what is my passion area, I think, for marketing that makes me most excited to see that strategy convert into a number almost.
Yeah, that's great. I wanted to ask you, you talk a lot in your trainings and your materials about the fundamentals of strategic thinking and brand analytics specifically. How do you think about adapting these fundamentals to this changing landscape of digital marketing, e-commerce, and changing consumer behaviors?
Yeah, I look at one of the things that's really happened in the marketing space from the start of my career to even today is the necessity for speed. And I think that is the biggest thing, but you can't leave the fundamentals alone. And you just have to find new ways to speed up. And when I was in marketing, one of the things I created was this plan on a page. And it was the one time when the sales team actually applauded me in the meeting. They said, so this plan is all on this one page. And I'm like, yeah. And the VP of sales started to clap. And, the notion that we have these binders or we have this shared drive with these 125 slides, it's just not a reality. Nobody's going to touch that a second time. But if you can create a one pager that travels, one of the things with creative briefs, I created this mini brief. And even thinking about, even a micro brief could even be smaller than that. But it's better to do the fundamentals around that type of work than not do it. The phone call brief is the worst kind of brief you could do because there's no trail. There's no way to communicate that to your boss and sell that into the organization because it was done on a phone call. And you might say, okay, it was only a small project. We only have a few hours to that. Well, that is even more necessity to have that trail of what you were intending to do. Because if you only dedicated 4 hours to a digital project, because it's only has that lifespan, well, what happens if you spend your 4 hours and your boss rejects it? Now 4 hours turns into 8 hours. And we just don't have that time anymore. The one missing ingredient with speed is strategy. Strategy, you have to find ways to slow down. And that's where you got to build into your own calendar. Maybe there's different ways to do it, but we have to find ways to still slow down, slow our brains down, and ask the difficult questions, the challenging questions. You know, I know Steve Jobs talked about going on a walking meeting, and I think that could be interesting, right? But it's different ways to get away from the email, get away from the desk, get into a space where we can question each other. And that's really crucial. So we've got to find ways, even as things speed up and the project list goes from 4 things to 240 things, I've still got to find a way to be fundamentally sound.
Yeah, I love the notion of the one-page business plan, a plan on a page. A friend of mine, a mentor of mine, he headed up corporate strategy at the company that I was at before in one of my previous roles. And that plan on a page came in handy so many different times. And it evolved as the transformation of a company or brand, whether it's, you know, portfolio companies or even in private equity, the same framework and the same learnings and the same behaviors apply from the simplicity of that plan on a page. It's almost, I liken it to, you know, that saying of if you can't explain it, you can't explain it to someone who's, you know, in middle school, you haven't simplified it enough.
Yeah.
And when you think you've simplified it enough, simplify it about 50% more, and then you're probably in the zone.
Yeah,
I really
we can get complicated. We can overly complicate stuff better than any other industry.
Yeah.
And I think we've got to find ways to make sure that we, you know, one of the things with strategy, first of all, I think somehow in strategy, we think this is the more intellectual part of business. And I think that's the worst thing you can ever do. It's smart, but it shouldn't be intellectual. It should use small words that can travel throughout the company, small ideas that can travel and cascade, you know, over to specialists or over to sales. You know, one of the things I mentioned, the sales team was really excited about the one pager. Well, if you're in sales in a CPG company, you might be calling on 15 different brands. And you can't read 100 slides on a brand if you have 15 of them. And so that one pager is key. Now, if we now think about it, are the social media specialists, they're going to have multiple brands. And so making sure they can understand your brand is going to be crucial. And that's what's really key. With positioning, I'm encouraging my clients to create a thesaurus of words, of 15 words. And again, that thesaurus can go to a social media expert who you can say, okay, when you're stuck for a word, it's likely on this page. And, you know, use that rather than, you know, I grew up in the Al Reese camp of narrowing your brand down to one word or one phrase like Volvo safety. But brands, I believe in today's world, can do about 15 words. Right. And that's what I really encourage people to do.
Yeah, completely agree. Wanted to ask you, in your book, Beloved Brands, you discuss building brands that consumers love. You talk a lot about that. Can you elaborate on a case study or maybe some practical advice from the book that those in our community, those that listen, particularly in the CPG industry, could apply to enhance their brand building efforts?
Well, I'm a huge fan of the Apple brand. I'm on an Apple computer right now. But if I go to an Apple store, there's people lined up to get into the store. And I always laugh at in my head because I'm almost feel like going, hey, guys, there's nothing new in that store today. But people still want to get into that store. And I just interbrand named Apple the number one brand of the world. And that is about, you know, we're now into 12 years since the passing of Steve Jobs. And, you know, most of us in CPG were not the founders. You know, I mentioned Listerine, a 140-year-old brand now, Coke, same age. We take these on. You know, Tim Cook is a brand manager. And so we can watch what he's been doing for the past 12 years. And he has been doing an exceptional job of managing that brand. And I think that is, to me, the best case study out there. They do a lot of things right, not everything, but they manage the product, they manage the retail environment, they manage the communication, and you know, they manage the sales of it. on the sale, on the floor of the Apple store, the salespeople are encouraged not to use geek language, you know, to talk about real benefits. And to me, that is what is at our core marketing. We tend to talk about ourselves too much and not about the consumer enough. And that's what I see as, you know, the best brand out there.
Love that. Love that. I wanted to finish off with one more question for you in closing. You know, you do have extensive experience leading marketing for, you mentioned the companies you work for in the beginning and many clients you work with now. Could you share a challenging situation that you encountered and how you navigated it to ensure exceptional work and ultimately drive business impact?
Yeah, and I think for me, the biggest challenges I've faced over the years, and marketers are not great at this, is selling in ideas. We're not, you know, even though we interact with salespeople so much, and even though we're communicating on a mass basis, we're not great at selling in work. And what I would encourage people to do, when I look back at my career, I have the luxury of clarity to see the entire career. And one of the things I noticed about my career is every bad idea I was part of sailed through approvals with ease. Every great idea had massive fights at every stage. If you're not willing to fight for your work and fight for your ideas, they're gonna die. And, you know, we can sometimes sit at our desk and be frustrated, but if you want to really change the brand and make your stuff happen, you've got to be willing to fight with your boss, your boss's boss. And I can point to numerous advertising stuff that I was part of. The great stuff, huge fights. The bad stuff, no fight at all. Everybody approved it. Everybody liked it. Why? Because we saw it last year and it worked last year. And you do it again, it doesn't work. Flopped. And the comfortable stuff, we really approve that too easily. And the uncomfortable stuff, we get scared of it, especially in that CPG space. You're trying to grind out. If you're in a CPG brand, you're not the luxury of an invention that's going to grow 568% this year. Big difference between 3% and 5%. You need to grind that out. We as marketers sometimes make mountains out of molehills, and we have to really work for that great stuff, fight for it, never be satisfied. I do believe that okay is contagious. You know, it's like a disease. Okay, once you approve the 6 out of 10, you're going to approve the 6 out of 10 next week and the next week. And yes, we can't all get 9 out of 10s, but you got to push for them. You know, I'd rather push for great work than just be satisfied with okay stuff. And that's really what the challenge has to be. And that's harder. As I mentioned, you know, you go back to 1995 and we're making 5 pieces of work, and now we're making 5 pieces of work per day. But the same mentality has got to be there. And you got to make sure that you can really push for that greatness, because that's really what's going to feel good and grow well. That's what the consumer wants to deal with too.
Yeah, that, you bring up a couple points that really resonate with me. I think about, you know, strategies about choice, and those choices cause contention, and good strategies about choice, right? Some people might say put strategy on a slide or on a document, but if it does not involve hard choices, it's really not a strategy. I think the other thing too is, you know, I think about really developing a transformative strategy. I think about, and again, I mentioned, you know, a mentor of mine, and you know, he likens the transformative strategy approach to 4 things, you know, define your priorities, design your big bets, develop your capabilities, and optimize the core. And I think to your point, the incrementalism is that thinking is almost contagious. To your point, if you okay a 6, you're going to okay a 6.1 and a 6.2, and they'll sail right through. I agree. I can think, I kind of was laughing thinking about some of my specific examples in my career, but those really good those really transformative, those really breakthrough ideas that didn't grow 3%, they grew 30 or they grew 50. It really came down to some, I mean, I don't want to over-dramatize, but some kind of knockdown, drag out debates about yep. choice and where we were going to grow. And was it the right decision? And was it the right playing field? And did we have the right to win? And all the things that you and I talk a lot about on social media. But yeah, well, you know, Graham, I wanted to just say thank you so much for joining this week's episode. I think the audience is going to get a ton of value from this. They might not be as big of a fan of you as I am, but that's okay. They can be half. And hopefully they'll go check out some of your work. And again, I just wanted to express my gratitude for you joining this week's episode of the CPG View.
All right. Well, thanks for hosting me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the CPG View, the number one CPG information source for global omnichannel leaders. Mm-hmm.